Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hey guys, it's Desiree, and welcome to my illustrious podcast, where music meets meaning. I'm your host, Desiree, and today we're diving into a cultural rhythm that's more than just a vibe. It's resistance, it's identity, it's legacy. Today's episode is titled Hip Hop and Caribbean Soundscapes, a dialogue of resistance and identity, explores how Francophone Caribbean music has helped shape the sound and soul of Black American hip hop. We'll hear from voices of theory, resistance, and rhythm, from Bart's quote unquote grain of the voice, to Kerry James' lyrical letter to France, and from soundscapes shaped by struggle to beats born of Black brilliance. Hip-hop and Caribbean music share more than just a percussive drive. They share stories. Both genres emerged from resistance, colonization, racism, poverty, and displacement. Here's a quote from Schaefer. The soundscape is any acoustic field of study. We can isolate an acoustic environment as a field of study just as we can study the characteristics of a given landscape. Schaefer's concept helps us understand music not just as an entertainment, but as an environment, lived experience made audible. To understand the Caribbean soundscape, we must hear its history, enslavement, revolution, diaspora, all echo in its rhythms. From Haitian compa to French Antillean zouk, music was survival. Kerry James, a French-Haitian rapper, confronts France's colonial amnesia in Lettre à la République.
Vous avez profité de l'Afrique et de ses richesses.
Now, we gonna pretend that I said that. Now what that translates to is this. You profited from Africa and its wealth. This is a sonic protest, a letter in the form of a beat, far from the Caribbean. Way across that ocean, hip-hop grew from the Bronx, New York, in the United States of America, like a phoenix from ashes. Disinvestment, policing, and systemic inequality birthed a new poetic form. Here's a quote from Trisha Rose, back in 1994, in The Black Noise. Rap music is a Black cultural expression that prioritizes Black voices from the margins of urban America. Now, I identify as a proud Black American through and through. My people went through a lot. And my people are kinfolk to the Caribbeans. Those are my cousins. The early MCs spoke truth to power. Their neighborhoods, my neighborhoods, were war zones. And the turntables were weapons. It was a way to show expression. It was a way to show it proudly without getting hurt. Without having to worry about, am I gonna make it back home? Without having your mama worry, is my son gonna come back? Now, I don't know how deep that may feel to other people that are not Black and don't know what the Black experience in America is, but that was really important. During this time, you had a lot of police brutality. You had the beating of Rodney King. You had the Central Park Five, who are now the Exonerated Five. And I do want to get a little personal right here. The best parts of me growing up in my home is family. I'm a huge family person. They come first. I love just spending time with my family and hearing the stories about how my mama and my daddy grew up. My mama, she's from the north. That's a northern girl. My daddy is a southern boy. So you know they had different tastes in music. They never let their differences in the music taste steer them away. I really think that's what pulled them closer. That's what attracted them even more. It was who they were. It was their own individuality. It was unique to their own story, their own culture, on how they grew up, and now that's who they are and they reflect of a person. I am personally so excited for this next part, y'all. I want to share a couple of minutes of my interview with my sweet dad, growing up as a Black Southern man in America, and how music, specifically hip-hop, really instilled with him. Hey, y'all. So today I have a special guest that I really love and I'm so proud to announce. My dad. Say hey, Dad.
What's going on, people? How y'all doing this evening, noon, tonight, this morning, all of the above?
I'm just going to jump right into it. And I just want you to tell me, what was life growing up, especially with having hip-hop, listening to it?
Well, I guess it was kind of a little bit different because it was just hip-hop was just really starting.
Okay, so, Dad, you said the 80s was really like where it was at in hip-hop. That was probably, what, arguably your favorite time of hip-hop? Or would you say
90s? Yeah, I would say so. Between the 80s and the 90s would be the best for me, the 80s and the 90s. I mean, I like Eric B and Rakim, you know. They were really good. LL Cool J, like I said. I even was down with Kumo B. I mean, he could flow, but, you know, I had Biggie and Tupac.
Would you say that really helped shape who you were individually, in your individuality as a person, as a black man, a young black man, growing up in America? Would you say that helped you?
It helped in a way to give you freedom as far as to how you want to dress yourself and not follow the norm, whatever the norm may be, you know, American society, you know, dress good, look good. You know, you started to wear more clothes that wasn't necessarily a suit or something, you could dress down. It gave me freedom of mind, man, freedom of speech.
Would you say it gave you a way of feeling seen?
It was a tool for me to use to express myself in ways that I didn't know how to before. It gave me a way of having some way to release some stress that was built up by dancing, maybe, you know. I feel like I could just let my hair down and just get in it. I mean, I guess I let it down too much because now I'm bald.
I hope y'all really enjoyed that interview just as much as I did. While I was able to go back home a couple of weeks ago and spend time with my mom, and I wanted to share her interview as well. Welcome back, y'all. So today I have a very special guest that I hold dearly to my heart, my mom.
What's up, everybody?
Okay, so first, would you like to give a little background of where you're from before we get into the topic?
I am originally a Northern City girl from Pennsylvania, Allentown, Pennsylvania, to be exact. Yes, that Allentown that Billy Joel wrote about, and we're living here in Allentown. That Allentown that is 90 miles from New York City and exactly 1 hour from Philadelphia. So we are pretty centrally located.
What kind of music do you remember hearing around the house or in your neighborhood as a kid?
As a kid, I was exposed to a lot of music. You know of my Boricua roots. My grandfather was Puerto Rican. So when I spent the night at Nana and Poppy's house, what a sweet memory. I can remember waking up on Saturday mornings and just hearing the salsa, the merengue, all through. You could hear it from house to house, window to window. Everybody was playing something different. Salsa from the neighbors just across the alleyway. I'm hearing salsa from the neighbors next door. So salsa has a very special and magical place in my heart. It's a part of my heritage. Then I'll come home and growing up on The Whispers and Luther and Stevie Wonder, of course. I mean, you go to church and what do you get? You get gospel, you get hymns, you get... So it's just so many sides that help to shape who I am. KRS-One, Kool Moe Dee, Eric B and Rakim, I mean, EPMD, the list goes on and on. We could have a hip-hop party for days and just be rocking and rocking and rocking and never hear the same thing twice because there's such a richness, such a vault of musical expression, and all those artists brought something different to the table. Did hip-hop help you understand or express your identity, especially growing up in the North and being a part of the culture? Yes, because of course, you know, hip-hop for us was a cultural expression, right? It was something that was born specifically to Black people. And then you had artists that went ahead and just solidified your Blackness through hip-hop, right? The generation before me, BB's generation, they had that through James Brown, I'm Black and I'm Proud, right? But for my generation, it was hip-hop and being able, you know, to hear, again, KRS-One, who just was very militant, right, in his rapping. Yet there was a sense of pride, like, just to accentuate your Blackness. Same thing with Public Enemy, Fight the Power. Let's not forget when our sisters came on the scene. Come on, Queen. Right. You know, UNITY. But proud to be a Black woman, right? To show still you could have wonderful femininity about yourself and be a powerful figure, right? And love your Blackness.
Now, I just kind of want to switch over into what I really want to talk about next, and that is the grain of the voice. Roland Barthes talks about the grain of the voice, the texture, emotion, and embodiment of the speaker. Here's a quote from Barthes. "The grain is the body and the voice as it sings, the hand as it writes." When you hear Wyclef Jean sing in Creole or Nas rhyme about Queen's Bridge, you hear the body, the lived experience. Another song that blends the Caribbean bridge that really connects to me on a more personal level is 100% by Big Pun featuring Tony Sunshine. Big Pun grew up in the Bronx, New York, and was Puerto Rican. He sadly passed away in 2000. In this song, he expresses his love for his country and culture, but uses the art that was founded in America, in his state and streets, rap, to create the New York cultural masterpiece, in my opinion. He looked into his fellow Latino artists before him. He sampled the song Anita by Lalo Schifrin, made in 1969, and stemmed the vocals and lyrics from Willie Colon and Hector Lavoe, El Dia de Suerte, made in 1973. Whether it's the Latinos in the Caribbean or the Creole, French, Caribbean people in general are linked with Black Americans. And when you zoom into their lyrical themes, they both speak on inequality. They reclaim ancestral pride. They use metaphor satire. And they prioritize rhythm as identity. The borders are blurred. I have two books that I really want to share and talk about. The first one is by Dick Hebdige. In 1987, he came out with Cut and Mix, Culture, Identity, and Caribbean Music. This explores how Caribbean music migrates and adapts, maintaining resistance through remixing. My second book I have for you guys is by Marcelina Morgan, and it came out in 2009. The book is called The Real Hip Hop, Battling for Knowledge, Power, and Respect in the LA Underground. Morgan documents how hip-hop scenes reclaim knowledge as cultural capital, showing parallels with Caribbean storytelling. Now we got the two books I had presented, I really wanted to point out their two approaches. They both had resistance, but for Hebdige, music as post-colonial resistance in the diasporic expression was in the UK. For Morgan, hip-hop was as urban resistance to racism, poverty, and the misrepresentation in media. For their influences on hip-hop, Hebdige showed how Caribbean music, especially the Jamaican migration, influenced its origins of hip-hop. For Morgan, she analyzes on what hip-hop has become. It was a tool and still is a tool for self-making storytelling and survival in the U.S. cities. So, as Bartz and Schaefer help us here, sound is body, its place, its memory. And hip hop, with its Caribbean cousins, is a moving, breathing act of revolution. I truly do thank y'all for joining me in this oral journey. Remember to follow the beat, trust the grain, and always stay loud.